Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I'm Tony Foreman.
And we were just talking about Bordeaux. We're going through the regions of France, and I think we ought to talk a little bit about food in Bordeaux, because I know the winemakers think about their regional cooking they're making...
And it's heavy.
It is not.
It is. All the traditional stuff is pretty heavy.
All
the charcuterie is big, rich, you know, like...
It's heavy in a good
way. The pork nectarine and... Mm-hmm. You know, the river eel cooked in red wine and mutton and, you know, goose confit.
Good beef. They have good beef there.
Yeah. Lamb. I mean, that's...
Lamb. Mm-hmm.
Lamb from Pauillac, one of the famous regions for Cabernet Sauvignon-based wines. You know, lamb from Pauillac is super famous. Chateau Pontet-Canet raised a lot more sheep than it did wine for a large majority of its history.
We should probably move on to Burgundy. We have a lot of regions to cover. Okay. So with Burgundy, you know, I think the soil there is so interesting, and the fact that the vineyard sites can be so small, I think that's really, what would you say about those aspects of, and the grape varietals for that region?
Well, the varietals are easy. That's the thing.
That's what I like about
the
Burgundy.
The only thing that's easy about
it's
Burgundy.
It's easy to remember.
Yeah, red wines are Pinot Noir, white wines are Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. There are a very few white wines that are Aligoté, and we're not going to really get into it, but that's very different from Chardonnay. Chardonnay from Burgundy is very different in character than you see from California. Usually the wines, and these are mostly oak-aged, and there's a couple different regions in Burgundy that grow, greater Burgundy, that grow Chardonnay. Chablis to the north, which is going to be from that different soil I was talking about, Cameridgian soil, and those are brighter, more almost sort of laser sharp, crystalline, more medium than full usually wines. Very distinctive character, but not super generous as far as their body and their fruit personality. From the Côte d'Or, that central region, and the Côte de Beaune is the famous region for mm-hmm. whites from Chardonnay there. And Merceau, Pliny Montrachet, a lot of the very famous names, you know, historically. Are the villages there that grow Chardonnay.
And what's happening with the soil changes? I mean, I know it can be from one site
to
the next.
Well, the soil changes, and there's different types of clay without getting into it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of little differences in drainage and exposure that have to do with how things ripen and when they flower
And up the hill and down in the valley floor.
Yeah.
You know, you've got so many different sites.
And a lot of those vineyards are not so steep. It's not like some of the famous red wine regions of the Côte de Nuit that are on much, you know, sort of more steep hill faces, but this is kind of gentle and it super, super interesting variations between them. But those are the classic, you know, generous but very mineral wines that you expect from Chardonnay from the Côte d'Or. Further south in Mâcon or the Côte Chalonnaise, you get things that are a little less distinctive aromatically and as far as, say, the mineral content, but more generous as far as they see a little more sun. The skin's a little thicker on the Chardonnay. You get bigger fruit characters. And often, Puy-Fuissé is the most famous, you know, or Mâcon Village, mm-hmm. well known, and remains a pretty good purchase in good vintages, like 2012 was, for Chardonnay, to give you some idea of wines from this
area.
What
would you say about vintages for Burgundy?
Super important.
Yes.
I mean,
Okay.
Burgundy is the minefield of learning about wine with your pocket. That's the thing. It's the toughest thing. It really has to be a project. And it's not every time. You may buy a case of wine of something from a magnificent site and a great grower in a great year, and it's going to show a little bit differently every time because, especially in the reds, these are delicate wines that go through very complex evolutions. This is a northern place to grow Pinot Noir, which is the red wine. And a lot of the famous red wine places in the world, Von Romanée or Gervais-Chambertin, Moret-Saint-Denis, some of the Grand Crus, Clos Vougeot, Richebourg.
Such a beautiful place.
They're magnificent things, but I'm never going to say that I have not been disappointed at times with a very, very expensive bottle of something from one of these places. The thing is that when they hit, when they are the real thing, there is a magic of expression that is not exactly contained in any other wine, and it's not exactly of this world, let's say. When I say magic, there literally is There are little things that happen in the perfume of some of these wines that are complex and interesting. And these are not great, big, dense red wines with, you know, immediate, obvious power. But it's a little bit like having someone tap you with a feather and you fall a long way as opposed to being punched in the gut.
Right.
A lot further away from the ground than you thought you were going to be.
And isn't there...
But it doesn't always happen. And sometimes you're out, you know, $100 or more a bottle for something, and it's not behaving the way that it's capable of behaving sometimes. And that sounds ridiculous, but I swear it's true, and I've tasted an awful lot of wines from this place and in that place and with growers in that place. And the particular mysteries of Burgundy are maybe one of the more wonderful and self-flagellating ways to go about wine consumption and learning France.
With the history of the region, it plays a pretty big part into the parcels of land and how it started and the church.
Right. So much of the parcels were owned by the church and slowly got broken up or bought off by different families. And then French inheritance laws have everything to do with a parcel being broken into four different pieces. And then through marriage, that piece becomes part of this other guy's piece of that parcel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Burgundy is its own very complex. Just the map alone will give you a bit of a headache. It's marvelous, but it is a rabbit hole to chase down.
Okay. Maybe we should move to Champagne.
Good transition, because Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are two of the grapes that are grown in Champagne. Here's the funny thing in Champagne: for a region that grows almost no red wine, most of the grapes grown are red grapes. Pinot Noir and a cousin of it in the same family, Pinot Meunier, are the two red grapes, and Chardonnay is the white grape. And in the soils there in Champagne, and there are a couple of different regions within Champagne proper, and the production of Champagne is huge. And I think while it doesn't rival Bordeaux, it's still millions and millions of bottles per house for the large houses that you know, like Tatinger or Veuve Clicquot or Moët Chandon or one of these guys.
It carries cachet. People are interested in Champagne. I think Champagne just has a whole different feeling than any other region.
Well, Champagne is a little bit of a victim of its own success, because the name became so ubiquitous for a sparkling wine for celebration that every region in the world that grows sparkling wine, we often misnomer the wines as Champagne, whether it's Concar Cava in Spain or Prosecco in Italy or some other kind of Italian spumante, or a sparkling wine from the West Coast is delicious. It's still not Champagne. Champagne is both the place, that region, and that is the northernmost region in France for growing wine. And it is also the method, the way the sparkling wine gets made in that region. And it's an interesting process for sure.
What are the, you know, some of the factors in the Rhone Valley wines that really distinguish them? You know, hours of sun, temperature, soil, season, vine adaptation, all these things that make the Rhone such a special region.
Those are great geeky questions. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing to know, one little easy sort of key is you think of the Loire Valley going east-west and being really long. The Rhone Valley is pretty darn long. It goes from Lyon. And by the way, the one thing in Burgundy we didn't tackle, the thing that's between sort of Burgundy proper, and politically it was part of Burgundy with Beaujolais, but soil-wise, it actually almost is more like the northernmost part of the Rhone Valley, because those are granite soils. And the wines there are not just the fruity red wines we always think of for Beaujolais. Quality-price ratio of Beaujolais can be very, very interesting. It's not just Nouveau, and can be terrific bistro wines for the table, for sure.
I love the wines from Beaujolais. Some of the tastings we had when we were there were brilliant. What were some of your favorite houses in Beaujolais?
They're bunches and bunches. Chateau Thivin is one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The thing to begin to learn are the different crews, the names, the different villages in Beaujolais. But that is that place in between Burgundy and the Rhone, really, as far as a growing region. Historically, politically, part of Burgundy. And cuisine-wise, part of Burgundy.
Yeah.
But until you get south of Lyon and then Valence, you don't really get into the Rhone Valley. But the climate is even pretty similar to Burgundy when you start in the Rhone. And in the Rhone, in that northern part of the Rhone, the red grape is Syrah, and the white grapes to know are Marsan and Roussanne. And the Syrah from up there, from a few very famous places, Hermitage, Côte Rôti, Saint-Joseph, Creux Hermitage, those are well-known places and wines that age pretty well from Syrah as a grape. One of my favorite little sort of trivia things about Italian grapes and how they come to France, because obviously the vine traveled via the Romans into France, and they traveled right up the Rhone River, which is the original part of there in the Côte Catalan near the Spanish border, modern day, are the first places you see the vine. And the vine traveled up the Rhone, and one of the grapes from Calabria, Majocco, is what adapted and became Syrah. It took about 1,000 years.
Wow.
But that's that grape that's done so well in the northern part there. And it's interesting to find it on the same hillsides, a very, very similar grape on the same hillsides all the way in, you know, southeastern Calabria.
Wow, yes, exactly.
You know, sort of where you can see Greece on a clear day.
Agriculture is amazing.
Yeah, the history of
people
in agriculture,
exactly,
is completely
right.
Fascinating.
Right.
And vines adapt. That's the, you know, mm-hmm, that's the other thing. But in those granite soils, they have a very different expression than they do, say, in Calabria, or than they do at Shiraz in Australia. And, you know, those are your basics up north there. The whites, there's also Viognier is a well-known grape a bit now in the States. Chateau Gruyère and Condrieu are the appellations. Those are both slightly painful to say, I guess, for an American pronouncing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you watch your mouth. You watch your mouth.
Oh, my gosh. What is it with Viognier? I just...
What is it?
Yeah.
Honestly, for me, sushi is
so unusual. Okay.
I love it with sushi.
Well, Viognier is really...
Which is not
a
French.
Very distinct grape varietal. Well, what do we eat with Viognier in France that works? I guess fish? No. There's probably not a lot of fish there.
Not so much
river
fish.
Fish or something.
Cheese for sure. Yeah. Part of the tradition of Condrieu, and I don't want to get into it too long, part of the tradition is to make it a little bit off dry also.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty opulent wines that are lower in acidity and have a great big richness to them.
Mm-hmm.
Some organ meats, some fish, but like delicate organ meats is where they do well. When the Rhone Valley, just like the Loire being long, the Rhone Valley is pretty long north to south.
Mm-hmm.
Once you head towards the southern part of the Rhone Valley, then you get to Mediterranean grapes. You see the climate change. All of a sudden, there's a palm tree or two.
Right, which is such a surprise all of a sudden.
And once you see that, and it's because it's a couple of hours drive between the northern part and the southern part. And in that drive, you all of a sudden get to Grenache, and you still see some Syrah and a grape Mourvèdre that the Spaniards call Monastrell that does well by the seashore. And literally, we always separate it, but Provence begins in that southern part of the Rhone Valley and heads all the way down to the seacoast.
Okay.
And Provence is famous for dry rosés. And in the springtime, for goodness sake, look for rosés from there. And those are mostly Grenache, but a lot of times you see some Mourvèdre and some Syrah in those. And there is a whole kit and caboodle of varietals. And this is almost all red wine country down there. There are a few whites, but it's all reds and a bit of rosé as you get to the seacoast in Provence. And between the Côte de Roussillon that we talked about, just sort of to follow the map,
mm-hmm,
and the center of France and that part of Provence, you find the Languedoc, and that is also interesting. That's where the soils change, and it becomes really interesting for Syrah in a very different expression.
So in the Languedoc, what is the difference in the soil? You're sandy all the way around, or no?
No, it's not sandy. It's not sandy and slate like you see in the Côte de Roussillon.
Okay.
It's much more, there's some granite, it's much more hilly, you get much steeper exposures there, you get cooler nights that the Syrah likes. It's a little bit less soil and a little bit more exposure and temperature variation there, which, again, grapes adapt very differently, so that's kind of how you see that stuff.
I think also the struggle of the vine is just what's so fascinating. No matter where the vine is, there's some sort of struggle going on to produce the best flavor in those grapes, and you just...
Or there isn't.
Okay.
And so you just get the fruit juice,
mm-hmm,
and you get it in big quantities.
Okay.
But in the places where the vine has to adapt and fight to live and live a long time, it may live a harder life and it produces fewer berries, but they have more intense flavor of the place and of the seasons. And that to me is the thing, that because France is so diverse and the cuisine is so diverse,
mm-hmm,
You know, because for sure, because because terroir is it's everything on the table affects terroir. Olives don't grow in the Loire Valley. Olives grow down south.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to have beautiful green olives, and you want to have a cold glass of dry Provençal rosé on a warm day.
Sure do. Yep.
In a shady spot.
Goes perfectly.
That's beautiful, but you don't think of that in the Loire. You think of the river fish and the slightly off-dry Vouvray,
mm-hmm.
and the rich garnishes and the rich vegetables to go with that, and the cream sauce that I know you want, Chef.
Oh, you know it. Well, and that's the thing. You know, once you understand the wine that comes from the region and the food that comes from the region, then you really understand pairing so much better. Because as you said at the beginning of the show, the things that grow together are what go together.
Yeah. An awful lot.
Often. Not always, but yeah.
I'm exempting my chondria and sushi affection, which really works incredibly well. Well, I think that's all we have time for on this giant topic. We encourage you to get out there and try some French wines.
Absolutely.
Open things with friends. Maybe taste a few comparatives.
Mm-hmm.
Super interesting.
And we'd love to hear from you about that, your experiences.
Yeah, you can reach us at foremanwolf@wypr.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can download this program or any of our others via podcast from the WYPR site.
And the interaction is what's so great. So if you do have questions for us or just want to give us comments, we're very happy to hear it. And also you can follow me on Twitter through Chef Cindy Wolf is my handle.
Well, thanks for listening. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR.